Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for October the 21st, 2022. This is episode number 133 and today's episode is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyres. All right, on today's show, we'll be talking about the reveal of the GMC Sierra Denali EV pickup truck, the debut of the Mercedes EQE SUV, and two ultra-premium vehicles from Rolls-Royce and Cadillac officially launch. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the unflappable Tom Malogny, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the madcap Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. All right, welcome everybody. Usually Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec, and he is on the road as he often is, and but out of like a cell signal, so we're flying like a trio today, right? All right, so I guess let's kick this thing off with some news and then get to an abbreviated version of what we've been driving this week. So we've got a bunch of new vehicles to talk about this week. So let's start with the GMC Sierra Denali EV. So let's see. So last night, the automaker took the covers off the GMC version of the pickup truck built on the Ultium platform. As expected, it has a lot in common with the Chevrolet Silverado EV, but it has some unique points as well. So some numbers real quick. The Edition 1, that's the launch edition, it comes with 754 horsepower and 785 pound-feet of torque. Incidentally, and this was pointed out to me by Nebula1701, who is a podcast viewer and Inside EV's forum member, that's 90 horsepower and 5 pound-feet more of torque than the Silverado EV debuted with, except Chevrolet has updated those numbers, so then they now match, actually. So, yeah, so we have this new Denali pickup truck and these numbers, and it looks like they've just been, whatever, synced up so all the numbers match up. So range is estimated to be 400 miles. System voltage is 800 volts. GMC isn't saying how big the battery is, but it's likely as big as the Hummer EVs or close. So maybe over 200 kilowatt hours. Peak charging power is said to be 350 kilowatts, and it also has a 19.2 kilowatt onboard AC charger. It's got three outlets in the back, a 240 outlet capable, a 240 volt outlet capable of 7,200 watts, and two 120 volt outlets that can support 2,400 watts apiece. And you can also get this like Ultium power bar accessory, which gives you up to 10 outlets and 10.2 kilowatts of power. So, yeah. And so in towing, it offers 9,500 pounds of towing. That's 4,300 kilograms. Like GMC Hummer EV, it has rear wheel steer. It can crab walk. 0-60 comes in like 4.5 seconds. With a max power mode on. So one difference between the Hummer EV and this one is that the max power mode is available as long as the driver wants it. It's not just for launching like in the Hummer EV. So like the Silverado and Hummer EV, GMC, the launch edition has all the goodies and Super Cruise, which means it's also expensive. It starts out at $107,000. So about a year after the Edition 1 launches in early 2024, there should be much more affordable versions like Elevation and AT4 trims, and those will start from $50,000, about $50,000. So more affordable trucks coming. This is, you know, ridiculously expensive, but it's the same price as pretty much, it's a little bit more than the Silverado EV base, I think, and I'm not sure how it compares with, it's really close to the Hummer as well. But so Tom, Sierra or Silverado, and why?
So I, you know, I kind of like this. I didn't look at it too much last night, to be honest with you. I looked at it this morning right before the show. But from what I saw, you know, I'm kind of liking the styling of this better. I'd imagine once we get all the Silverado EV specs, which they're as you noted earlier, they already upped the horsepower. I think they're probably going to play the game of giving you a little bit more and a little bit more as it gets closer to launch. You know, I think the specs are going to be pretty much the same, and it's going to be your basically what you like the styling wise. It's kind of like as it is now, and price wise, you know, you said $107,000. That's probably I haven't priced out Lightning now in the Platinum trim, the top trim, after Ford did the price increase, and it's probably not far from that. So, you know, this seems like if you were going to go for the Lightning Platinum fully loaded versus this, this would be a little bit of a better deal. But, you know, it's got the bigger battery. It's got the faster DC fast charging. It's got some cool features like what do they call that, where the rear opens up so you could slide stuff in and have like 11 feet of cargo space. I forget GM's term for it.
Right. They do have a special term. Yeah.
And they also, you notice they came out with just slightly more power for their offloading power capability. I know Ford calls it Pro Power Onboard. And what is GM called? The Power Station Onboard? I think it's very similar.
Onboard Power Station.
Onboard Power Station. Yeah. So they, and that can offload 10.5 kilowatt, I think you said?
10.2. Yes.
10.2. And the Lightning can do 9.6. So, you know, great. We get that little, you know, constant back and forth where one ups the other and the consumer wins. You know, you get each one's going to do a little bit better than the next. Ford's already told me they're working on their next generation pickup trucks, you know, for maybe 2025. That's going to be that much better than now. So the Lightning came out, this comes out in 23, 24, then in 25, the Lightning's going to be, you know, the battery tech's going to be that much better. It's going to go further. It's going to tow better. So that's great that we're in this cycle now of electric pickup trucks just going to come out every year. I think we're going to either get a new one or an improved version of the previous one. And that's good for us. But I like this. I have a friend that actually I'm making a video now of I'm letting a whole bunch of people that I know around here that are friends of mine that are like total pickup truck drivers borrow my Rivian for like 1 or 2 days, then the Lightning for 1 or 2 days. Then I record, I interview them. What did you think of the two? And two of my friends are like Denali guys, and they've had like 3 or 4 different Denali pickup trucks in a row. So I'm going to actually forward them this after the show today. But I like it. I think it's I think people are going to love it. Everybody loves the Lightning, and that's just the Lightning in a different flavor, you know, with the GM badge.
Right. What do you call that thing in the back of the bed, the front of the bed that opens up so you can extend the bed is called the Multi-Pro Midgate.
So, which is a cool feature, you know, especially for lumber and things that are long. You know, I think that's a really cool feature.
So kayaks. Where does this sit into? So the Ford has the Lightning Pro, which was 40. Now it's heading towards 50 grand. But either way, that is the work version. Now, we don't have GMC here as a brand. We don't have Denali here. So fill me in. Is there going to be an entry-level version of this like there is with the Lightning, or does this purely exist at the top end of the market?
So they did talk about lower versions, but this is the Denali, which is like their, you know, the GMC's highest level trim. You know, it's so I don't know if Denali is going to have an entry level that would compete with Ford Pro. You know, I think it would be a different trim level.
It'd be the Elevation or AT4. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how the GMC trims work, but I guess I'm going to learn.
Yeah, the Elevation I think is the base, and if I recall correctly, there was around a $50,000 version is what they had floated, right?
Done. Right, which is right in line with the Lightning too. That's like 52 now, I think, or something like that. Yeah, and the lower one won't be, you know, 200 kilowatt hours and 800 volt system. It'll have, you know, half of that and around 400 volt system.
Yeah.
And probably a little slower charging.
I missed what the pack size. I was pushing buttons. What is it?
They haven't announced the exact pack size. Okay. No, but it's got to be similar to the Hummer EV. I see David Lust just said, I test drove the Lightning. I think it's cool, but I think many people would be intimidated by that large screen. Just want a button, simpler interface. Well, then, David, you can get the XLT version of the Lightning. You only get that big screen in the Lariat and Platinum. So get an XLT with extended range battery pack, and there you go. And I actually really like the base screen that Ford has in the Lightning. It's pretty big. It's not a huge screen, but it seems like it's the perfect size for a work pickup truck. Like somebody, you know, the Lightning, the big, huge screen that I have, you know, wouldn't be, it's cool, but I don't know if it's appropriate for a real work truck. You know, when you're working, your hands are dirty and greasy. You don't want to be constantly touching that. So I think Ford nailed it with that, the smaller screen for the Pro and the XLT.
Yeah.
Right. So GMC is like the posture of the two, right? Chevrolet and GMC. So this will be a slightly posher, nicer than the Silverado, you think?
I think that you would say that. I don't know. I think it's just different flavor. I think the Denali is like the posh, you know, version of the GM pickup trucks in general. Like that's like top of the line. But I don't know. I don't believe so. I don't think because I have friends that have regular GMC Sierras, and they seem like regular Silverado to me on the inside.
So have they learned from that? They've looked at what's on the market already. They've bought themselves, you know, a Ford and a Rivian, and they've gone out and gone, right, now we're going to be to the market later than everyone else, but let's adopt all the best things. So is there anything that this is missing that is kind of out there at the minute? I can't work it. It's got their version of Pro Power on board. It seems to have all the things that's gone down well with truck buyers. Is this the kind of off-roady vehicle like the Rivian is? Because the Rivian pitches as an adventure vehicle. Or is this more like something that's never going to hit the trail and it's just going to be, you know, on tarmac all the time?
I think most of the time on tarmac, to be honest with you. Maybe Dom has a different opinion. Well,
I feel like they're not really talking about off-roading on this press release at all. And it feels like they're leaving like the off-road to the Hummer EV, which was I found to be, you know, super capable off-road, except for the large size. But
it looks pretty restrained to me. Like I've seen some some future EVs that are coming that are a little bit more wild inside, or and then there's the Lightning, which of course is just, it's a Lightning, and they buy 2 million of that widget or that switch, and then they stick them on, you know, the vehicles. Seems pretty tasteful. I don't mean to insult American taste, but you know, it seems pretty restrained and pulled back.
I look at this interior and I think, oh, it's like mature.
Yes, good word for it.
Mature, if you're, I don't know, want to put on airs.
But it looks nice. It looks very already very complete. So
yeah,
let's get on and make it.
Right. All right. So let's talk about something else then. Let's move along. We got a bunch of different things. So the 2023 Mercedes EQE SUV also made its debut this week in both regular and spicy AMG flavors. So just as the EQS has an SUV version, so does the EQE, and they look very much alike. Mercedes' eighth EV, we only get a few of them here in the US, but they have more in Europe. The EQE offers more interior space in the sedan, despite having a wheelbase that's like 3.5 inches shorter, and it's shorter overall by 5.4 inches, but it's also slightly wider and, of course, taller than the EQE sedan. There are going to be four versions of this, starting with a 288-horsepower rear-wheel drive EQE 350 Plus to the top-of-the-line AMG 53. The AMG makes 677 horsepower if you spring for the AMG Dynamic Plus Pack. Otherwise, it makes 617, which is still plenty, I guess. And the AMG gets to 60 miles an hour in about 3.4 seconds and has a 149 mile an hour top speed for those late night Autobahn runs. I think the lower specs have their top speed limited to, I forget the exact number, but I think it's around 120-ish or so. So all variants get a 90.6 kilowatt hour battery with 330 volt architecture. So the voltage is a little bit low on this, but the peak charging power is 170 kilowatts. So onboard power, onboard charger is 11 kilowatts, but there's an option for a 22 kilowatt unit. Range for the rear wheel drive version is 341 on the WLTP cycle. It will be built in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and begin deliveries next year. Pricing not yet available, but it should be just a bit more than EQE sedan, which is estimated around $70,000. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but I don't think we can talk driving impressions. I know Kyle's driven it, but he's not here to talk about it regardless. But Martin, is this the EQ that people should buy, the Mercedes EQ?
Well, I think the proportions of it look so much better as well, because the EQS, which, you know, fair enough, has a certain styling that people like or don't like, but it's because it's a very long limo, particularly in sedan form, and then they've made a proper EV. So they've pushed the wheels to the four corners, small bonnet, and small overhangs, which is great, and they should be congratulated for making dedicated platforms and making proper electric cars. And the proportions of that of the EQS look a little bit wrong to me. I gather it looks a little bit better when it's, you know, in when you see it in person. Whereas this, I think the proportions of it are better, and also I think making it the SUV style as well helps to just give it a nicer aesthetic to my eye. I prefer the way that it looks on this. The fact they've gone with the AMG version straight out of the gate, 700 horsepower almost, although I gather that's a boost horsepower, I think, Dom, you got the specs
right
there.
But yeah, it's 617 horsepower, then you get to 677 if you opt for that Dynamic Plus pack.
So does anyone need an SUV that is the AMG version that goes this fast and is this expensive? No, but need and want are very different things. And I absolutely want one of these, but I don't need one in a million years. But it looks fantastic, doesn't it? And I think the styling, I guess some interior pictures there. The interior, the same as the EQS, same as the EQE, is just full of luxury. It's going to be so premium when you drive this. You're going to feel like $1 million if you've stumped up for one of these, and in the back as well. It's going to be a great place to exist. So I guess, yeah, like the AMG version, if you are doing a commute, or you know, you have to use a vehicle for family chores or anything like that, then and you want to have some fun at the weekend and say, right, I'm disappearing off for an hour, for a blast or something, then go for that one. I thought it was interesting that they gave it 170 kilowatt DC fast charging. In fact, I think the press release I read this week said when plugged into a 170 kilowatt fast charger. And I thought to myself, I don't think there are any of those. There's 150s and 250s and things, but I know what they meant by it. Right. And so, yeah, charge curve is all important. How much can they hold that? As you say, it's a 400 volt architecture, lower pack voltage compared to some of the cars that are out there at the minute. But that's not the be all and end all. I think Mercedes are making really, really good electric vehicles now. Yes, they're all the top end of the market, but if you want to get yourself, I don't know if you have the EQA where you are, been out a couple of years now, and if you want to buy yourself a used EQA, those prices, that's still a very nice car, by the way. No, it's still 50,000 or 45,000, but the prices are coming down at the bottom end. But yeah, they've certainly got that halo of those cars as well. I really love the way this looks.
Yeah, it's very much like the EQS SUV. It's like a mini, it's like the same thing, but it's slightly smaller. I think it's 10 inches shorter overall, but I think I like this one better. And like, if this is, it seems to me like there's going to be like a $30,000 or so price difference. And man, I'll give up like a bit of room for $30,000. I don't know, Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Martin said it right. This is it's like an EQS but with better proportions. You know, it just works. The styling to me really is good. Now, the interesting thing is the EQS sedan, I'm not a fan of the exterior looks on that. It drives wonderfully. I've had a chance to drive it extensively. It really drives well, but I'm just not a fan. Then they came out with the EQS, you know, SUV, and it looked better. In my opinion, I think the proportions, then they came out with the EQE sedan, and I was like, okay, now they've nailed it. And now I see this, it almost seems like it. The styling keeps getting better. I don't know if I'm getting used to it or if the proportions are just make it look better. I don't know if you have the same thoughts, Martin, but like, you know, maybe we're just getting used to that new design language, but I think this looks really nice. I mean, this, what's the startup, Dom? I missed that. What are we looking at? Not the AMG version.
We don't know.
We don't know yet. Okay. Cause you know, I mean, if these aren't crazy expensive, that to me, that's, you know, that's the play to get with the Mercedes, I think, electric vehicles.
I think EQS is around $107,000, but the difference between the sedans and the SUVs is only a couple grand. So if the EQE is around 70 or so, then, you know, maybe 75. Yes, I don't know.
Well, if it's less than 80, it can qualify, I guess, right, for the right. Oh, yeah. It's built in the U.S.
We
don't know
qualify.
About the mineral sourcing or the battery components, but there's a good chance that this could qualify, at least some versions of it, for the for the tax credit, and that makes a difference.
Amit in the comments says, is it 70 or 80? Because Amit in screen says 70 grand. Is it 80 or 70?
I think it should be 70. Yeah, it's
he corrects himself. There we go. My bad.
Right.
It's 80.
Right.
Yeah.
What were we saying, Tom?
And
sorry,
Martin mentioned about how the Mercedes says, you know, when charging from 170 kilowatt DC fast charger, and it's interesting when manufacturers how they use the terminology of describing how fast a car will charge. Because Martin, one of the things that, I mean, you mentioned they should say, you know, 350 kilowatt DC fast charger. But I think there's a problem with that because I've seen when manufacturers state that, like, you know, the note on the bottom will say charging from a 350 kilowatt DC fast charger. And people that don't understand this say, oh, it can charge at 350 kilowatts. So it's almost like, well, maybe they should change the wording to say, when charging from a charging station that can deliver 170 kilowatts. I don't know if they should say when charging from a 350 kilowatt DC fast charger, because it confuses people.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good shout.
Yeah. I've had people on some of the new EVs state like, Ioniq 5 or EV6 owners say, oh yeah, no, I read this, you know, Kia says this can charge at 350 kilowatts. And, you know, you have to explain, you need a 350 kilowatt station, but it's not going to be able to accept all the power that station can deliver. So that, like, I wish we could just come out with a standard that everybody uses to explain how their car charges, you know, whether use the same terminology. I know that's not going to happen, and automakers don't hold hands and sing kumbaya, but, you know, I wish we could come up with some set terminology so people can compare the vehicles. But as it is now, it's very confusing for someone new to electric vehicles.
I just had a look, and over here, the EQE starts at 73, and the pound has recovered a little bit in the last 24 hours since our Prime Minister, who did 44 days work and then has packed her bags. The pound has recovered because the markets didn't like her economic plan or the Chancellor. So it's not quite a one-to-one anymore, heading towards that. So maybe that's what, $70,000, but EQE 73, I think the EQE SUV is £2,000 more, which is not a big offset to go. I'd go for the SUV, as much as no one needs another SUV. It is more practical. My wife would every day of the week go for that SUV look and feel. So what's that, like $80,000 maybe it could start at? I don't know. I haven't got the US pricing to hand.
Right. Oh, you can bet that it's going to be below $80,000 because it's going to be eligible for the IRA money, right? So
and that's 79. And then even Tesla this week on the because there was a Tesla earnings call. You know, they were talking about the composition of the batteries and saying we won't get the federal tax credit, not all of it. I think that's going to be a common theme that we've mentioned this before when we start to have to ask not just where's the car made, and that's fine. Tuscaloosa, we understand that. And even if the parts are sourced from around the world, as long as they're assembled to a certain percentage in North America, we get that bit. That's the bit of the IRA that we understand. And then the mineral composition and the metals and the 50% and the ramping up to 100%, all of that is going to be an absolute minefield. And the car manufacturers aren't going to want to put it on their asterisk on a press release because it's so deep in the weeds. Yeah. And you know what? The people writing the press releases won't know. And it'll go so far back up the chain. I'm sure some of the car companies don't even know at the minute, like whether all of their vehicles will get all of the tax credits. I'm sure they're working it out still.
Yeah,
100%. Trying to source materials from countries that are on the list of acceptable. So
I mean, we saw this week. It's not in the show notes that Dom you put together, but BMW announcing $1.7 billion dollars of investment in the US, with $1 billion for vehicle manufacturing and $700 million for a battery plant, along with I think CATL is their partner, which would be interesting because that's Chinese.
Yes.
So has that piece of legislation worked? Well,
yes.
Yes. And people say, oh, but it's protectionism and it's all about creating American jobs. And you sort of go, yeah, like there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, ideologically, you can disagree with it.
Sure.
China disagrees with it, but it's like, okay, throwing stones in glass houses. And Canada has been a massive benefit to the Canadian industry. I think it's 10 significant announcements since January I read this year, this week, which is amazing in terms of, we can, they're really, really pushing the Canadian, particularly with processing and battery production as well. So, look, yes, it's absolutely worked, but it's still a minefield.
Right. It's worked good bringing in more lithium production and lithium processing in the States, but it's not really helping buyers yet, or it's just our end of it is like crazy, but I think it looks like it's being very successful as far as like bringing investment into the U.S. And this is like transportation. It's like a big deal. It's an important industry, so it makes sense that we should have our own supply chain, a domestic supply chain. So things could happen all over the world, and we're insulated from international politics somewhat.
Yeah,
I think it makes sense.
Well, the European Union this week, South Korea has been complaining daily about the IRA, and the EU have becoming more vocal because Tesla's Model Y, I think it was the Model Y, was Germany's number one selling vehicle in last month in September. I think it was the Y, not the 3. And so the EU didn't miss a trick to go, oh, and you know what? We do give incentives to American or Chinese made vehicles because they're not made in Berlin, those ones that were being sold, and they're like unlike other countries. So I think there's a huge amount of lobbying going on behind the scenes. I don't know what will change because Biden signed it into law, but maybe I think with the relationship with South Korea, I think perhaps I can see Hyundai and Kia probably getting access to it, maybe not for January, but something will be done.
I thought I saw something about the European Union maybe getting a special relationship status where they're involved with the IRA as well. So things could be produced there. And also, I don't know. We'll have to see.
It's a little bit of a mess at this point. And I think we haven't seen the final form of how this is going to lay out.
Someone's asking about my Bolt Saga. Well, I'll update in what we've been driving at the end of the show.
Yeah, we need the update.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, little things. Today's a busy day on that front. But, let's move on and talk about something else. I think, was there anything else that we want to mention about the EQE? No, we're good with that. Let's move on. So So this week, two different automakers officially debuted ultra-luxury vehicles. Oh. One of those was the Rolls-Royce Spectre. And you can... Spectre.
There you go. Let me bring that up. There we go.
So it sits on the architecture of luxury platform, which sounds very posh, especially compared with its acronym, AOL. So we don't have all the details yet, but it said to get 260 miles of range. It's got 577 horsepower and 664 pound-feet of torque. 0 to 62 miles an hour, that's or 0 to 100 kilometers an hour, is 4.4 seconds. It weighs 6,559 pounds.
Of course it does.
It's a coupe, and it weighs 6,559 pounds. It's kind of porky if you consider that a Tesla Model X Plaid, the heaviest Tesla, is 5,300 90 pounds. So over 100 or over 1,000 pounds less.
It's a Rolls. They're always heavy.
I mean, but that's.
That's like commercial. That's like commercial vehicle heavy.
I mean, it's not like a Hummer EV, but it's still, man.
Yeah.
For two seats, for two people. So deliveries begin before the end of next year, and it starts at $400,000. So, Martin, have you made a reservation? What, number one? And two, Rolls-Royce hasn't sold an electric vehicle before. Are people ready to shell out that kind of money for a first effort?
No, because it's got 260 miles of range, and I think the people that spend that much money on this car... Look, if you want an EV... And if you love electric and you've been faffing around the edges of luxury and you probably got yourself, you know, back in the day, a Model X and spec'd it to the max, and then maybe now you've got either a BMW iX or maybe you've got an EQS or an EQS SUV, but you are swimming in that pool of having 400 grand or 300,000 for a Rolls-Royce and you love EVs, you're going to buy it regardless. But no, I don't think 260 miles of range is enough for a vehicle like this. This, not when you're looking at cars like the Lucid that have got 500 miles as Tom tested, it ticked over to 500 with the Lucid Air. Different vehicle. Absolutely, I totally get that. But I'm saying that that is the mental benchmark that gets set out there at the top end of the market. And so there is nothing out there that is on sale to any of the big OEMs that they can't pick up the phone to any cutting edge technology and say, we're going to make, you know, 2,000 of these cars next year. I don't know. That might be optimistic. We want the latest, greatest, best battery technology. And whether that is, you know, I know that it won't, you know, a year and a half is a little bit too soon for the StoreDot stuff, because the Israeli company StoreDot, with their semi-solid state batteries, their test cells are now with the car makers and they're doing some real world testing, but it's a long way off from commercialized production. But still, I think that sounds like they're making it with today's technology. You're going to have so much margin in this vehicle that, you know what, if you add another 20 grand to the price because that latest battery or solid state battery or whatever that you go for is really expensive, you can soak it up. These kind of vehicles should be the absolute cutting edge. And
yep, I agree. Mean,
yeah, it's heavy. So, yeah, you're not going to go a huge distance. But, man, I mean... Yes, you can do clever stuff with software, and they are doing stuff with the way that it disconnects the anti-roll bar so that you literally don't feel anything from the road, so that each wheel is whatever a road surface it's on thousands of times a second. It can disconnect and not move the car around. And that should be expected of a car that costs this much money.
Yeah.
And, of course, Rolls-Royce spend a huge amount of money damping their vehicles and soundproofing their vehicles and deadening their vehicles. Well, that's to disguise the sound of a nice big, I don't know, W12 or something, whatever's up front. And then electric power is quiet. So you're already dealing with a much quieter car. So electric solves some problems for Rolls-Royce.
Right.
But I don't think coming out of the gates with 260 miles
it is enough. Safe.
I think it's going to be this huge mileage, fast-charging beast that is just the greatest technology known to man.
So Simon Matthews says, to be honest, Rolls-Royce are city cars, which is true. I mean, people aren't probably going to drive like 100, more than 130 miles, you know, 130 miles one way, 130 miles back. Probably not, but still, you know, range is... like still kind of a luxury kind of thing, and I need to see at least 300 miles. I mean, that's kind of minimum.
They're French Riviera cars. They're Côte d'Azur cars. You know, they will do 20 miles to a nice restaurant and back again.
Yeah, don't forget the people that own these have five other cars.
Yeah,
you know, and if they are going to drive a long distance, they can use one of the other cars. But the fact of the matter is, if you buy a $400,000 car, chances are you're flying anywhere that's longer than 300 or 400 miles from your house.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, I don't think the range is as big a problem, practically. It might be the problem for the buyer to, maybe they won't buy it to say, oh, that's not sufficient, even though they're never going to drive this thing 400 miles, you know, on a road trip.
Well, that's my point, is that we've all come across this over the last however many years. You ask someone how many, and Tom, you have a very kind of famous thing that you go back to, which is, if you think that mileage isn't enough, put a logbook in your glove box and don't just do it for a week, but do it for a month. Write down every journey you make, log it, and you don't drive very far, but it's the mental thing to overcome.
I gotcha. I still think you're going to see like athletes and celebrities, you know, pulling up to Hollywood in this thing. So I think they'll sell them. I mean, obviously they're not building it just to, you know, churn out 5,000 a month of these. So, you know, I think they'll sell them. I would have preferred if the range figure began with a 3, but even where it's at now, I think they'll find the buyers that just have so much money that want this in their collection.
And it's got that umbrella here we're looking at on our screen now. It's got the umbrella in the door, or actually it's right in the front fender. But when you open the door, you get access to it. Because these doors open from the front, actually, which is very cool. It's a pretty awesome car. But let's move on and talk about another awesome ultra-luxury car that none of us are going to probably buy either. the Cadillac Celestiq has made its official debut this week. Of course, we've seen this car for its design debut. It's the concept design debut back in July. But now it has optical mirrors, a slightly revised lower bumper, and different wheels, and a blue color. I liked it in the original concept gray. This is I'm not a royal blue fan, but anyway. It's also got official price tag and some specs now, so we can talk about those a little bit. So the big number here is 300,000. That's what it's expected to start at, but Cadillac won't be selling any $300,000 Celestiq. With complete bespoke customization available, I would not be surprised to see an ASP, average selling price, of over $400,000. Spec-wise, it'll have a 111 kilowatt-hour battery. They estimate good for 300 miles of range. It's all-wheel drive with 600 horsepower and 640 pound-feet of torque. 0 to 60 is projected to be a crazy 3.8 seconds. Peak charge rate is said to be 200 kilowatts. Tom, I know they're very different cars, but Rolls-Royce Spectre or Cadillac Celestiq?
I don't know. If you're up in that price range, who doesn't want to say, oh, I'm going to go get the Rolls? You know, have the Cadillac come around, you know, bring the Cadillac around front. You know, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the Celestiq.
All right.
Really not.
Sure.
I'm not in love with the styling. Right. You know, honestly, for that money out there, I'd go with the Rolls and suffer, not have as big of a interior cabin, but, you know, that's just me.
Right.
Not a big fan. I'm, you know, I think it's cool, and it's obviously a halo car for GM, and look what we can do. And they're, you know, it's going to be hand built. They're not going to, you know, they're obviously not planning on selling a lot of them, but it's a technology showcase for them. So in that regards, I'm not saying they should have never done this.
Right.
But you know, I'm not a huge Celestiq fan.
I'd be curious what kind of take rate they got on this Celestiq, because I think people can order now, right? Yeah, people can order
I
now.
I think that looks terrible.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to be too harsh.
Sure, no. I mean, I saw it in person. I know how much I liked it in person. I can see where people can be challenged by it looking at it on the screen, but yeah.
What was it? Was it properly barge like in person?
Yes.
Was it massive? It was stupidly big.
It's stupidly big, yes. It reminded me of like a, you know, size wise, like a 72 Eldorado or something.
Yeah.
I'll take the 72 Eldorado.
I kind of like the 72 Eldorado. Cadillac, I mean, a convertible. I have a friend actually who has a, like that era Cadillac convertible. It's a huge monster. It's just a rolling sculpture. It's so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we talked about this, we talked about, it would be 150 or 200,000, and then they came out and said, no, it's, you know, starting at 300, but as you say, everyone will be bespoke.
Yeah.
Again, we don't have the brand here. So does that brand command enough loyalty from people who just want the latest, greatest Cadillac? Has it sold anything this expensive before? Is what I guess.
No. This is it. This is I mean, back in the day, Cadillac was like a custom, very custom automaker. I think they did a lot of low volume, very expensive designs. But you know, over the past decades, they've chased the more like affordable luxury kind of market. You know. So yeah,
that huge overhang in the back just really doesn't work for me. You know, it just seems so out of proportion.
That's fair. I forgot. I lost my train of thought, but yeah, we can move on. But I'm surprised they got pretty decent performance of this. I think it's speaks to the Ultium platform. You know, seems to lend itself into like in this application pretty well. I mean, so crazy amount of. I don't know why we don't. This car does not need 3.8 seconds 0 to 60. Like, no. It does not need that. I don't know what else you could. You know. Yeah. Sometimes you can trade off like acceleration for top end, but you don't need 150 mile an hour top end on a Cadillac either, because they're probably not going to see the Autobahn. Yeah. Anyway, we can move on. So let's talk about something a little cheaper. So this week, a much cheaper car got its price tag. The new Kia Niro EV will start at $40,745, destination included. So this is for a 201 horsepower front drive car with 253 miles of range now, and a peak charge rate of 85 kilowatts. It gets two trim levels, wind and wave. Wave starts at $45,745 and adds heated and ventilated seats, a sunroof, and many more options. The battery is slightly larger than the outgoing model, so it offers a bit more range and fast charge speed. But Tom, if you look at the like Bolt EUV, which has similar specs and only costs $28,195, or maybe worse, the Kia EV6 starting at $42,695. Did Kia get this wrong?
So, you know, I actually had a conversation with somebody recently about this and the fact that you can get the EV6 Wind for nearly the same price, the small battery EV6. But I still think that it's good that I'm happy that Kia brought this back in EV form, because it just gives another option. It's a totally different looking vehicle. It's about 8 inches smaller than the EV6, so it is smaller. I think it's bigger than the Bolt EUV though, Dom. Right. We'd have to check that length. I'm glad they brought it back. I like the Niros. They're popular. Everybody that I know that owns one loves them. And I think it's good to have another option in the in Kia's EV arsenal. It depends how you want to, I guess, fit it out with options, because you can, as you said, bring it up into EV6 range very easily. But some people might just prefer the form factor of this over an EV6. Maybe they don't need that extra size. And believe it or not, some people actually do like front wheel drive. So that could be a reason why some people go for it.
That's true. Some people do prefer front wheel drive. Yeah.
No, I'm glad they have it. I think it's a good option. And, I disagree with those that say, oh, it's too close to EV6. They should have just really killed this off and just focused on EV6. It's a totally different EV. It's got different interior ergonomics. It looks totally different. And, we're used to having combustion vehicles, a whole bunch of vehicles in a lineup that are very similar. I've said this before about some manufacturers. Geez, they have three vehicles that are almost the same thing, just in slightly different form. It's okay if we start getting that with electric vehicles now.
I think it looks really nice. I kind of like it, but man.
Not with that panel at the back in a contrasting color.
I like that.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I like that. Oh, yeah. It totally gives it. It sets it apart from everything else on the road, basically. And it kind of works with that. See the bottom strip along. I can't see my hand. The bottom color strip across the bottom. You know, it matches up. It kind of gives it some balance.
When I've seen it in body color, I think it looks. That would be the one I go for. I think it's an option. I think is this the default? And then you have to. It's not a cost option, but I think you have to option it out, I think. I think that's which way round it is. This is a such a fantastic car, this and the Kona. This is bigger than the Kona EV, but it's such a... I'm so pleased that they've remodeled this and given it a mid-cycle refresh, and off they go again, because such a good family car. An 85 kilowatt charging is utterly enough for most people, and that's the peak rate, and it'll do a lot less than that if the battery isn't a low state of charge. So I just... would love... I mean, it's really hard, isn't it? Because none of us are running car companies. And we don't know the pressures they're under. I would love it to be less than 40. And I'm sure they would love it to be as cheap as possible without, right, you know, the tax credit from January. So that is a disadvantage against things like the Bolt. But it's a great car.
So it is. And it also goes about 20 or 30 miles further than the base EV6.
Oh.
So...
You know, the small battery EV6.
That's something. Yeah. Well, the base EV6, the one that is comparable price wise, that's only a little more than this, Dom, has the small battery, the 58 kilowatt hour battery pack. So this, you know, does cost a little less, and it does go further.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's something there. It's a bit smaller than the EV6, I think, but it also, besides, it has a bit more range than the previous version. It also has now the you can get the option offboard power, so the little plug. Like on the EV6, it also has that you can export power from the battery to light up your barbecue or
there
whatever.
You
there you go, your coffee maker.
The little dong.
There you go.
Because you're at the beach and you want to make a coffee. So right? You brought it with you.
Of course, you just set up your little table that you keep with you and your coffee maker and
yeah,
your coffee, your cup, and creamy sugar. And
yeah.
I wonder if does it have a frunk?
Oh, I can't remember. No, they don't.
I don't believe it does.
I think on the Inside EV's forum, we've had some owners make a tiny frunk.
Yeah, I've seen before. MG owners do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But John Check asks, is it still CHAdeMO? No, John. You know, Kia is pretty much is CCS now. You know, they had the Soul EV was CHAdeMO, but since then they've moved on.
It may have the little compartment for a smelly takeaway, or at least the charging cable.
This is open right there.
So it may have a really small storage under there. There you go.
Next photo might have. Yeah.
that's actually quite sizable. That's quite large. So this is the front wheel drive as well. So if they made this rear wheel drive, I guess they'd eat up boot space, but you'd have even more room in there. So it's great and really efficient. And then, you know, we always talk about the Niro and the Kona being really efficient, but you can drive around without paying any attention to what your right foot is doing and get 4+ miles per kilowatt hour in most conditions. And if you particularly want to go for it and really drive eco, you can get some amazing range out of these vehicles.
I wonder if they fix it, like, so on takeoff, these things apparently are they like to squeal the tires a bit.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah.
I wonder if they refine that a little bit for this version.
So little software control when you, and even at, I think, about 25 or 30 miles an hour, when I had the Kona, if you went for it, you could squeal the tires.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, there's very little in sort of interruption between
that
your right foot.
That interior looks good. And you have some at your door there, Avon?
Yeah, I'm going to go check and see. My wife is out. Let me check. I'll be back in a...
All right. Oh, he disappeared. Okay.
He said he'll be back in a sec.
Well, I was going to ask him about the next thing, but yeah. I don't know if there's anything else we want to talk about the Kia.
I think we got the Kia.
We killed that Kia.
No, let's jump. Move on.
let's move on. All right. Well, so this is for Martin, though, because like the first electric... Let's talk about something else then.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can go out of order, Dom.
Yeah, we can go. Yeah, right. well, I've got three other stories that I wanted to, you know, hit at least briefly. Oh, I know what we want to talk about. So Tesla introduces a new $550 G1772 wall connector for non-Tesla EVs. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get your take on this, actually, Tom.
You know, if you remember last year, around this time, they released the, or maybe even the year earlier, I forget. I know it was in the fall. They announced that they were selling the J1772 wall connector, but it was their previous generation wall connectors that they had outfitted with J1772. And they sold them for like a month. I bought one and I reviewed it. And then they pulled it from their from the website. I guess they probably had a couple thousand of them and just sold out. But now this is the Gen 3 that has the J1772. And this seems like this is probably going to be something that they sell from now on. This isn't just a one-off. They probably, as I said, just wanted to get rid of their old inventory of the second gen wall connectors, but now they're bringing this back, hopefully, and going to make it available. It's a good unit. Tesla makes good wall connectors, and it's kind of weird that you would say, well, why would somebody that bought a Kia or something, buy a Tesla charger, and I mean, if they do their due diligence, it doesn't matter what brand it is. It's a pretty good unit. And that also it is a smart Wi-Fi connected unit. So you can use it in condos for controlled access. And so individual people can only, they can only let certain people use it. Now, I haven't tested that out yet with Tesla, but that's what they announced, that this was going to be able to have controlled access so that you could use these in public places like condos and apartment buildings. I could definitely see it with that for that use case, because we need more of these, level two chargers that can be used for public spaces like apartment buildings and parking lots where you need to control the access.
It's good looking.
If you can bill people for it as well, I say, if you are an apartment manager or something, and you can assign even if you're just covering your costs for the energy, and Tesla enable that, then that's interesting.
Hey Tom, buddy points out that your camera is doing some weird things. It's changing your color balance.
Well, I guess we're going to ride it out for this podcast. I'm not going to take it apart and try to figure it out. I have a new camera. I used it last week's podcast.
Okay.
A new Logitech, and I don't know if there's some settings I have to change or whatever. But maybe. I see what you're talking about. It's like goes from like a pure white.
You're like a Smurf at one moment, and then you're like a normal human the next moment. And
yeah, I don't know. I could fix that at this point.
It's okay. Buddy says who was at the door. Buddy, it was an Amazon delivery for my neighbor. It wasn't even for me because they're out at work, and I work from home all day. And they're like, "Can you sign for this?" I'm like, "I'm kind of doing a broadcast, but yeah, no worries." So there you go, buddy.
So the first electric Jeep debuted in Paris this week. So normally that would be an odd place to debut a Jeep, but this one is for Europe and a few other markets that are not America. So built on the Stellantis STLA small platform, the Jeep Avenger EV is a subcompact crossover with front-wheel drive and 249 miles of range. The battery is 54 kilowatt hours and powers a 154 horsepower motor. I didn't write up a whole lot of stuff about this to talk about, but Martin, how do you think the Jeep brand will be received there?
Yeah, good. There's nothing wrong with the Jeep brand, and I did. It was either last week or the week before. You asked me if it was, do we have Jeeps over here? I was like, yeah, we do have Jeeps, and I mentioned it on my podcast as well. And I don't want to get the number wrong, so the Jeep don't call me and say. That was wrong. I think it was something like 2,600 vehicles for all of last year. So they have a presence. It was it was in low thousands. Somebody sent me the government registration data. So yeah, we have Jeeps, and I've the Cherokee flies around, or the Grand Cherokee or something. But it's not a brand that I pay any attention to, because I don't even know where the Jeep dealerships are. But I don't even know what they have on sale. This though. This is going to absolutely be in the right territory. They're almost at a starting, almost a standing start, because I think people hear Jeep and they think, an army, American army off-roader kind of thing, or American army vehicle. So I think many people will not have a relationship with the Jeep brand, but they'll know the name. And this for the European market, it's absolutely spot on. It's the right size. It's the right segment. This is, if they get the pricing right on this, then we've just been talking about the Niro and the Kona. And so before you get up into that next bunch of vehicles like the IONIQ 5 and the EV6 and stuff, so at this price point, then, and you can see that the press pictures they've put out, you know, right. A woman putting her mountain bike in the back, a woman with a baby buggy showing, hey, you can fold it down and get it in there. So that's clearly what they're wanting us to focus on and talk about in terms of who'll buy this vehicle. So I think that if they get the pricing right, it looks really cool inside, looks really contemporary. And yeah, if they put half decent technology inside, and forgive me if I missed the specs that you mentioned, it is the 54 kilowatt hour.
Yes.
Is it? Yeah.
Sorry. Sounds right.
What's the battery?
54 or 56.
Yeah. So it's not mega. It's less than the 64 kilowatt hour that you get in the South Korean cars that we've mentioned. And again, depends what Stellantis do with their next generation technology. They've got a new factory in France that's being retooled to then make all the next gen electric motors and stuff. So hopefully this is a step on from that that spec that they had in the parts bin for the Peugeots and Citroens and things. And so that's 50 kilowatt hour battery pack. 50 kilowatt, 100 kilowatt motor, 100 kilowatt DC fast charging. If they can multiply all of that by 25%, 30%, make them a little bit better, and do that in a way that keeps the price down, this is a really interesting vehicle for Europe, for mainland Europe, for the UK as well. It's never going to go off-road in a million years. As long as they make a two-wheel drive version of this to keep the cost down, it can be front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive, then... And the price is right, then when you go out and you're like, well, what am I going to get? Am I going to get an Opel, or am I going to get a Peugeot E?
Or 3008.
Yeah, 3008 or something. And then this comes up and you go, oh, okay, that looks cool. My wife would love this.
I like this better than the European brands, as far as like in the same category, Stellantis brands.
Like, she loves the Volvo XC40 Recharge. And in her mind, she would look at this. It's got that SUV kind of off-roady look. It sits a little bit high, and she wouldn't, because she's not a car person, she wouldn't know that the XC40 is, you know, 10 or 15,000 more than this, depending on what Jeep do with the pricing. And honestly, she, as long as it's got Apple CarPlay, get in the car, plug it in, she's happy. So this is great. Probably too small for your market. Will it come to the US?
That's the thing. It's like a little bit smaller than the Compass, and no, it's not going to come to the US. No. I mean, so we already sell like a small Jeep has a small crossover here. It's called the Renegade. Renegade. So it's like a little smaller than that even, and so I don't think that they don't want to. They can't make the margin of the sales here on that car. I don't think so.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I'm wondering if they're going to give it four-wheel drive. That's a possibility. It does have like selectable terrain modes, like normal, eco, sport, mud, snow, sand, and a hill descent mode, which seems odd to have in a front-wheel drive car, even if it is like a Jeep. So maybe there's a possibility it'll get all-wheel drive. Do you have?
I think they will. If it's the Jeep brand, they've surely got to do an option for four-wheel drive.
Do they have four-wheel drive on other STLA small platform vehicles?
Not that I know of. Yeah, you're asking now. Yeah, not that I know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I think it's a really cool sweet spot.
Yeah, it's nice. We'll have to see how that works out, but I guess you'll let us know. So you mentioned earlier, so Tesla had its earnings call this week, and they did super great again as usual. There's no big headwinds for Tesla, you know, that I see as far as like production and money rolling in for now, financial results. But the call was interesting. So I missed that part that you said about the critical minerals.
Yep.
For the battery things. But they did mention something that did get to my ear, and that's that Tesla's next platform is going to be smaller and half the cost of a Model 3, Model Y. Mm. And so at one point, you know, we heard that, okay, Tesla's going to have like a small $25,000 car, and it seemed like it got nixed or got put on the back burner. I think it got put on the back burner, and some people figured that was it. That was, they're just not going to do it. But it's back. it's back, baby. And yeah, I don't know. It's not gonna. We have a picture up on the screen here now. It's not gonna look like that. It's, I don't know. I don't know, but they do have like huge production plans for it. I think Elon was saying that it will probably end up outselling everything else they make. Did you listen to the call, Tom?
I didn't listen to the call, but you know, we've heard about this many times, you know, from Tesla, from Musk, and I don't think anybody ever doubted that we're eventually going to get a less expensive car. If you remember, there was a lot of talk about the $25,000 Tesla, and
right.
I think some people thought that it was going to happen sooner, you know, in a few years ago when we started talking about this. But I was always skeptical of that because the economics of the Tesla being able to do that was just, it just wasn't there. You know, there was just, we know what it cost to build cars, what it cost to make batteries, and it just wasn't possible. If we could have, you know, all these $25,000 EVs, we would have them already. You know, the Bolt EV that you're talking about getting is the closest thing to the you know, the famed $20,000 EV that has decent range. You know, $25,000 EV, because as Tesla said, you know, they, was it 300 miles? They won't, they you know, it's like the goal to always have a car drive go at least 300 miles, but which has been a moving target for them. Musk have said that and then pulled back on it. But, you know, for, let's say 250 miles. Building that $25,000 car has just been elusive. But we knew, I believe at least Tesla was going to get to it at some point. It seems like they might have Cybertruck kind of mostly engineered now and ready to go into production. They, you know, again, we'll believe it when we see it, but it seems like at some point they have to start making that thing. And if they're going to start building at the end of this year, then they must have most of the engineering issues worked out by this point. And maybe they can focus their energy now on next. But I would caution people to worry to think about when this was going to happen. Just because they're talking about this, don't think that, you know, 2024, 2025, this is coming. I bet you we don't see Tesla's, you know, mass market, more affordable EV before 2027 or 2028 even.
I think we'll see the first design next year, maybe after the Cybertruck starts deliveries, which I think the Cybertruck now is, so it's the pencils down design-wise, and they're already putting the tooling in the factory. They're installing the tooling. I think that's where they're at right now, so production could start pretty soon. There were a couple of Cybertrucks spotted this week, but they were spotted undercover. It looks like they might have been shipped to Texas. I don't think they were made there.
But it's coming. I believe 100% that this, you know, the $30,000 250-mile Tesla is going to be a reality. I just don't know when that's going to happen. I don't think it's, you know, anytime soon.
It's going to have competition in that end of the market, because the Equinox is going to be like $30,000 to start. I mean, Tesla should be able to eat those Equinox specs and with a lower price even. But
let's see. I'm still skeptical that GM's going to be able to sell the Equinox for $30,000.
Sure. I mean, that's a pretty stripped down version of the Equinox.
Yeah, I'm still skeptical that that's going to happen with all the price increases we've seen lately. And I hear from all the manufacturers how all their costs are going up. So, like, they've never had to deal with such rapid multiple increases in their across their supply chain, and they're trying to, where does this end? You know, when do we raise prices now, or do we wait until, you know, things have leveled off and then do one big price increase? Now, we saw Ford raise the price on the Lightning Pro twice because of it. So, I mean, if GM can pull that off, $30,000 Equinox, that's nuts.
Yeah. All right.
I think this is where I come off Elon Musk's Christmas card list, because he has, I think, now used up, apart from his hardcore fans, I think he's now used up a lot of his built-up capital that he had from the general kind of EV buyers and general public.
Goodwill,
And a lot of the goodwill. I think he's used that up because he generated a lot of it with all of that talk of we're going to make self-driving cars, etc. And people trusted him on that. And long-time viewers know my frustration is he's promised so much that it gets a bad reputation. Actually, it's incredible, especially on highways. Teslas are amazing when they work. And when they don't work, in terms of full self-driving, it's atrocious because you went under a tree. And that's the frustrating thing. He's promised so much. I think what will be really interesting to watch is the Twitter purchase has no doubt shown chinks in his armor. Like on the call, he said, he admitted paying far too much for Twitter. And his fellow investors are as well. So again, when he says, we know we're paying too much for Twitter, when it looks like he's even with the financing, probably short by between $7 and $9 billion. So he's going to have to sell more Tesla shares. And has said in the past, I am never selling. I'll be the last one out. And as, you know, it's absolutely fine. As he says more stuff that he then doesn't, and you can call it lying if you want, but the longer we have him in our life and if you pay attention and you like this kind of conversation, the more he said over the years, I am never selling my stock. I'm the first and I'm the last one out. And then he's like, yeah, I got to sell more stocks on buying Twitter.
Yeah.
Like so much of that breaks down trust. And then he's like, yeah, we're going to make a robot. Here's someone in a dancing suit. And then they're like, oh, now it's AI day. We've got three engineers to lift the robot on stage. Oh, because by the way, it doesn't work yet. I think people see chinks in his armor. And it's a really, really interesting thing to watch because he's no longer viewed as this infallible genius. And it's like, oh, okay, so maybe he doesn't know what he's doing. And that frustrates me because at their core business, energy storage and the cars are just amazing. But he says so much stuff that's just nonsense. It gets thrown out. The baby gets thrown out with the bathwater. Will Tesla make a $25,000 vehicle? Probably, because they want to get to 20 million a year, and you can't sell 20 million threes and Ys a year by the end of the decade. So you need more vehicles. But he said so much stuff in the past that hasn't come true that he says stuff like this, and I'm like, eh. It's just all hot air. You're just pumping the stock because you've got to sell it today or next week to buy Twitter. And I think it makes me really sad because I don't want to think that. And it's like, I just want to love the cars they make, which are brilliant.
Right. I don't think Elon, or he doesn't let on that he really cares about the stock price because he'll...
Of course he does.
He'll say it like it's overvalued, which is something that you never say because...
Oh, well, look, his latest...
It takes a big, you know...
His latest thing that he was trying to wheel out on the call was like, guys, I'm not an investor. He said, I'm not an investor, I'm an engineer. And like his latest plan of attack is to... So if this all goes wrong, he's already sowing the seeds of, I never said I was an investor. Like... What a weird thing to say, just to go out of his way and say, hey, I'm not an investor, I'm an engineer. So if it all goes, upwards. It just annoys me talking about stuff like this because let's just talk about the cars that they're really good at making. And they're just really good at engineering and particularly software. But this whole 25,000 thing, it's not happening anytime soon.
Okay. My prediction.
It's not. They've got a semi truck they promised in 2017, which is still not here. It's coming. Pepsi are getting theirs.
They're making it this year. This year.
Yeah. Where are they?
They're being made.
Where are they?
They're in the factory.
Oh, you, Dom, you're such a nice person. You give him so much benefit of the doubt.
I do.
And roadsters and Cybertrucks, and now 25,000 thing comes back round again. Look, get Berlin working.
Right.
Get Texas working. Like I say, I'm not on his Christmas card list.
No, it's fine, and I understand your point of view because things have been delayed and stuff. But then if you look at the excuse, I'll call it an excuse that he gives that they just it's makes more sense for them to use the batteries that they have and the vehicles that they already developed and they're selling now and they have infinite demand for. Throw them in there for now, then do maybe there's less margin on these new products. I don't know. It's just financially, that's the smart move. But people are waiting for these products, so you still have to keep your some the Roadsters are ridiculously delayed. I guess the Semi too. They both came out at the same time, right? The Roadster came out of the back of the Semi.
And he still has over 100 people that are waiting to get their free Roadster.
How long have they been waiting for their free Roadster?
They're never getting their free Roadster.
I think they will. I think the Roadsters will start production next year.
If you say something's coming and you haven't yet delivered it, are you a liar? Like, if you say, oh, we're going to make cars that drive themselves.
I don't like calling people like
in
this.
In fact, he did. In fact, on the, it's a really interesting call. I don't really want to spend too much time talking about it. But okay. If you note it, Dom, you listen to it as well. He said that they will... I'm going to misquote him, but they will solve full self-driving given enough time.
What, 100%. It, he said 100% or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, right. given enough time. So sure. Great, come back in 50 years.
And you can stick a million monkeys in a room and it works as Shakespeare at some point too, right?
It's over-promising, under-delivering, you know, it's and it just annoys me because, you know, there's a lot to celebrate about the company.
But he says that Dom is a bit gullible.
No!
He has a point. He has a point.
No, Dom's got a kind heart, unlike me. And, you want to see people succeed.
Right. I don't
and
mind
as
being
John
naive
said,
one.
He fell in love with Kyle's car, so now he's, you know. Now he's a Tesla fanboy.
That's what it was. Right. But anyway. Dom, can we talk about your Bolt yet? Your Spark,
sorry. Well, let's see what time we come. Yeah, we can. I just want to mention also real quick that that Sharon launched the megawatt charging system in North America this week. So that was great to see. But it's still not going to be available. I think the first commercial one is going to be built in 2025. Did you see that, Tom?
Yeah. Well, they had the Sharon Association meeting in Portland just a couple of weeks ago. And right. Kyle and I were both invited, but neither one of us could make it. So... this is fantastic. It just blows my mind the amount of power that these stations are going to be delivering. You know, it's insane when you think about more than 10 times the power of a 350 kilowatt DC fast charger it can deliver. We need that for the trucks with these giant batteries if they're going to be, you know, recharging them quickly. But it's just the power is just immense. It's unbelievable how much power gets delivered.
It's designed for a maximum current of 3,000 amps at up to 1,250 volts, which is means like a potential 4, of 3,750 kilowatts.
Yeah.
3.75 megawatts. I mean, that's the I don't think they won't push it that hard to you know, they won't come near the its limits. So probably around 1 megawatt is the standard configuration.
Yeah.
It's like 1,000 kilowatts,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, good.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, 4 Taycans plugging in at once.
Right. So. I mean, the batteries on these trucks are going to be, you know, several hundred kilowatt hours of battery. So it needs that to keep the time. Charging time has to be like 20 minute stops in there somehow, 20 to 30 minutes. Right.
Yeah, I think a half an hour is reasonable. I mean, when the truckers need to get out and stretch their legs, use the restroom, you know, and just, you know, from where the charge is going to be to walking inside to the, you know, wherever they sell coffee or whatever. I think 30 minutes to get to like a, you know, 80% or whatever they need to get to their rest of their to the destination or the next charger is that's reasonable.
Right. They had like 300 attendees at that. They call it a testival. Some testing. In a festival.
I went to the testival last year, but I just couldn't make this year's.
Right on. Well, I just wanted to mention that because that's kind of an important milestone, I think.
Mm-hmm. And these testivals are really cool. It wasn't just for megawatt charging. When I went last year, so they have all of the different charging equipment there, like commercial charging equipment, DC fast chargers, all the companies that make them are there. And all the manufacturers bring their cars, even cars that aren't out yet. So I got to see the BMW i7 last year, like way months before anybody could see it. I couldn't take pictures or anything like that. And I got to see some other really cool goodies that I'm not supposed to talk about, but adapter-wise, really cool things. And, you know, it was great to see all the manufacturers working together. Like that, you'd see the guy from Mercedes showing a guy from Volkswagen his laptop because, like, you know, when he was recording their charging session, there was an anomaly on this certain charger. And he wanted to see, did you have that same anomaly? And, you know, all of the engineers, it was like they're working for one company. It wasn't Ford versus Chevy or Mercedes versus Audi. These are the geeks that are trying to figure out the charging issues. So they don't care that they're talking to someone from another company. You know, they just, if they can give me some information I don't know, if they're willing to share it with me, then that's fine with me. So it was really cool watching everybody work together to try to, you know, understand if this station didn't work at this temperature and things like that. It was pretty cool.
So is this the connector going to be on the Tesla Semi?
I don't think we have any confirmation yet, okay. But I think that's the assumption that that's what's going to be used on.
Okay. You know. I mean, it looks kind of like the regular Tesla connector, yeah. Slightly larger.
It wasn't on the test vehicles, but that was just tying together a bunch of plugs. So
actually, yeah. You know what? Tom, do you think this MCS would be better than the CCS2 for regular cars? It looks like less clunky.
That's pretty big, though.
Is it? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're not changing at this point, Dom. It's we're riding CCS wave.
You know, my God!
That's not going to happen.
We're going to have my naive version of the future has this charging wirelessly.
Yeah,
you know, in our garages.
I could see that, but I mean, connector wise, I mean, at this point, it'd be very hard for me to see the industry agreeing to do a wholesale change on the plug.
Right. So, talking about what we've been driving this week. So Kyle's not here, and he's always got a bunch of stuff to talk about that he's been driving. So we're gonna have to keep this one pretty short. And Tom, you've got a vehicle to drive this week, but you've only had it like for a little bit and.
Yeah,
I've driven before.
There's a Hummer EV in my driveway right now, and shame on me because it's been like I got it and it's been sitting there for almost 2 days now, and I haven't driven it.
What?
I mean, I've driven it like down to the town center to get a cup of coffee, but like I think I've put like 18 miles on it in 2 days.
Come down and visit.
So, yeah, no, I've just been so busy. This weekend is when I'm really going to get it out and do a bunch of stuff with it, particularly a lot of charging stuff. So it's crazy. It's, I tell you, just driving that thing around, all you see is every other cars, people in the cars holding up cell phones, recording you, taking pictures. It's nuts. It's too much attention. And I tell you, I've driven the Hummer now for quite a bit. I did the range test with it. I've driven it on first drive events, and it's a great vehicle. I think it's really cool. But I honestly, if you look at, I have my Rivian, I have the Lightning, and there's the Hummer. It would come in number three for me as a daily driver.
Okay.
I'd like to take it out on the weekends and everything, but as you know, if you said, look, you can only keep one of these and it doesn't matter what the price is, it would not be first or second.
That's the only one you can take the roof off of, though. You can't take the roof off the roof.
Right. That's pretty cool. I haven't done that. I'm not going to do it. It's cold here now in New Jersey, or it's getting cold. It's like in the 50s. So, it is a super cool vehicle. I'm not trying to diminish it in any way. It's really cool. I will say this, that I opened the frunk and it wouldn't close. So there's something wrong with the frunk. I had to manually push it down to make it latch. So there's something wrong with the frunk. And I tried it a couple different times and ways using either the key fob or the interior of the dashboard to close the frunk. And it won't close. So there's
it
something
won't
wrong
even
with
move
it. I have,
it won't
I have to tell the FMI, the outfit that does the loans, that they have to see if they can get a fix for the next journalist, because they have somebody else lined up for this next week.
So, I mean, it won't latch or it won't close?
The weirdest thing is when you use the key fob, it won't close at all. So when you use the button inside on the dashboard, you press it and hold it, it closes and it goes almost all the way down and then it pops up. So then I have to go out and push it down. And I've tried it multiple times. And like I said, I've driven the Hummers before. I've opened and closed the frunk. So it's not like I'm doing something wrong. It's just... you know, it's not, there's an issue with it, which, you know, that's not a, you know, this happens, you know, it's a press fleet vehicle. I think it's like VIN number 22. So it's you know, it's one of their early builds, yeah. And I won't kill them on that, but I did witness it, so I have to note it. I have to note sure, it at sure. least.
But it would latch, so manually when you push down, it latches up, yeah. So you can drive it.
Okay. Yeah, I could drive it. So. Oh, that's good. But I'm just not going to open it anymore. There's no reason for me to open it.
So, and you're gonna make a video though with it this week, like a short demo with the F-150.
I'm mostly charging videos, I think.
Okay.
Because I did the range test when I had it out in Michigan. I did the first drive. I did a video of like driving it over rocks and everything. So I think I'm really just gonna to focus on charging, because if you remember when I did the range test, I wanted to record the full charging session and it wouldn't charge. It kept shutting off. And then when I did get it to charge, it pulled up about 200 kilowatts. Then it dropped down to 130 and did it the whole time. So I showed GM I actually sent them my video of my charge recordings, and they were like, yeah, that's not right. We got to get you another one. And so that's why I have it for the weekend.
Okay. I think on Twitter, you said something about a showdown with the F-150.
Well, I'm going to try to do some comparison things with it, at some point over the weekend.
Okay, so if you haven't subscribed to Tom's channel, ring that bell for a notification. So when that pops up, you'll have it. And I guess we'll probably have an article on Inside EVs.
We should, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I honestly don't have this weekend planned out exactly what I'm going to do with it. I know it's going to be a lot of charging. So in order to do a lot of charging, I have to drive it a lot, because once I do a 0 to 100% charge session recording, then I need to drive it down to zero again, and it goes like 350 miles, so I'm gonna be just driving to nowhere with it to get the charge state of charge low, so I can record again.
Yeah, you're almost at 50,000 subscribers, Tom. I just saw it's on your channel.
The state of charge has been picking up. Things are going good with that. I'm doing a lot, and now that I have the garage finished here, I'm gonna start doing my charging station reviews again. I haven't done them in months because I had the garage all ripped apart. As you can see behind me right here, I have the Emporia EVSE, and that's a 48 amp smart charger. I'm currently doing using it to do the full review on the Emporia. That's one of the units that I've had a lot of my followers ask me to review. So I think this is going to be a popular one. It's a pretty good unit. It's scoring well so far.
Our commenters want to see a tug of war, Tom.
Don't break it.
F-150 versus the Hummer EV.
I don't know if anything could beat the Hummer EV. It weighs 9,000 pounds, and it has giant 35-inch knobby tires that are going to get great traction.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't put my money on anything besides the Hummer.
Right. I mean, you could probably hook the Hummer up to my house and pull it somewhere.
Yeah. It's such a rolling.
It's like a building on wheels already.
Beast. It really is, yeah.
So a little
and the crab walk's funny. Sorry to interrupt you, Don. I was doing some crab walk with it yesterday, actually, on a side street. And it's so weird when you're driving and you're going like this, and then you go this way, and you should be going forward, but the vehicle's going like this. It's such a freaky feeling. In reality, I don't know when I would ever need that or use that. I guess if you're off-roading and you really have a tight, tight trail, you know, so I'm not saying it's useless, but I think it's much more of a parlor trick than anything. You know, the rear steering is more useful. Amazing. The turning radius on that truck is crazy. Like I have a big circle at landing at the top of my driveway, and I have to make like a 5-point turn with the Lightning. You know, it's so big. The Hummer EV, it's like I can almost make it in one turn.
Wow.
It's crazy how tight that is with the rear steering.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So you're saying it's a city truck, basically.
It's much more maneuverable than a truck of that size should be.
The rear steering
works ridiculously good.
I didn't mention it earlier in the podcast, but the EQS or the EQE SUV also has some rear steering, even though it's got a shorter wheelbase than the sedan. It's got a shorter wheelbase, so it's got an incredible turning radius as well.
I tell you, there's a lot of country winding roads where I live.
Yeah.
And I did... you know, take it just for a couple of miles right around my block. And I got on it a little bit. Luckily, it's really rural here. There's not a lot of vehicles on the road. And I couldn't believe how well and responsive it was because of the rear steering with these giant tires and all this weight. It actually was able to you know, really, you know, carve up some turns, which was like crazy.
Yeah.
But it's a fun vehicle to drive. But quite honestly, as I said, I don't think I'd want to own one.
Hmm. Yeah. Given the choice of the other three, it's hard to make it right. Yeah. I love being in it, though. So a little update on my situation here. I haven't gotten a Bolt yet. I am still in the market for a Bolt.
Have you sold your car yet?
So this is the thing that tomorrow, today they're coming to pick it up.
Yes.
To tow it to Valdosta, where I have to drive Kyle's car to Valdosta, Georgia tomorrow to meet a guy in the Walmart parking lot. So he can.
That doesn't sound sketchy at all.
I know, right? And I could. It's like $300 and some bucks to tow it there too. It doesn't have. There's not quite the infrastructure or range to get there. It's just on the edge of my range.
So
I
don't want
to. And my front tires don't have a lot of tread on them either. So it's like, yeah. So that's where that is. And so the I guess what the deal is, they come and they check out the car, they do like an inspection, and they take it for a quick drive, make sure it operates, and then hopefully they sign a check or whatever, sign off on it, and then I can de-stress and relax because I am so stressed about this whole thing.
Did you get? Oh my God. Did you get the money that you wanted, or has the valuations gone down?
Because it went up.
I thought it was gonna,
I think the last time I done this whole, you know, you get, it was through Carvana, so you get on the Carvana site and they're not a sponsor of ours or anything, so I'm not, you get on the site and they give you an offer, they make you an offer. So the last one I think it was 14.5 ish or something, and this time it was like 14.9.
Wow. So
it's going to cover the towing basically.
Yeah,
but I think this is going to be it for the high prices for Carvana. I feel like, man, they can't be paying this much money for cars now because just the economy's taking a bit of a downturn with they're hauling in raising the interest rates and just hauling in the economy trying to fight inflation. So
we've got two, they're not the same as Carvana, but we've got two recently launched online marketplaces that do really heavy TV advertising. One's called Cazoo, one's called Cinch. One, I forget which one is owned or affiliated with the national auction chain. So rather than offloading vehicles at auction for less money, they're putting them online and polishing them up and making them look all sparkly. And so we're changing the MG ZS before Christmas. We've had it a year, so it's time to change it. Love it, but time to change it. So just been having a look online. And so I thought I'd look at Tesla prices because there was never a Model 3 less than 40 grand, even a crazy high mileage. Well, now there's a bunch of Model 3s in the 30s, which I've never, ever seen. But my point being, they have got a ton of stock. So these, a Carvana equivalents or whatever, like there's a lot to pick from, all sitting in warehouses scattered around the country. And that's great if you're buying a car. But if I was running one of these companies and we're seeing the price of cars start to come down, then they've got thousands of cars on their books tied up in of just that is just not working capital for you, and it's just waiting. Wow, I couldn't get over. I'd never been to either of these websites before, and I couldn't get over the stock they had.
Wow,
just
because that's the opposite of what it was recently, right? Couldn't find a car.
Just a huge amount. And I was looking at. So what is in our budget of 30,000 is the small battery Kona, maybe a new MG4, they're 27-28, in the big battery but lower spec. And so anything around that. So we can't get into a VW MEB platform car because they're all mid-30s and stuff. But I was like, well, just for fun, I'll have a look at Tesla.
Jeep Avenger?
What's that?
Jeep Avenger?
Yeah, not yet. We can only afford used cars. But... but I couldn't get over the stock these companies have. So, yeah, I just couldn't. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe. We have one over here called We Buy Any Car. And I put the MG into that, and they're offering more than I paid for it a year ago. And I've added 15,000 miles in a year. And nice. It doesn't make any sense to me. How is that a how is that a business model?
I know.
I don't know how Carvana's going to make money on Dom's Spark EV. Buying it from him for $15,000. You know, what are they going to sell it for? It's a 16, right, Dom?
I guess. No, it's a 2015.
2015.
With now three 8-year-old
Spark EV that goes like 50 miles per charge.
Yeah, it goes like 70. It can get 70 miles of range.
What'd you do on the highway range test with Kyle? 53?
Right. Yeah, something like that.
At 70 miles an hour? It goes 50 miles of highway range.
Definitely not a highway car. Yeah, but it's a fun car. It's a great car to drive. It's a joy. I really love it. And I kind of wouldn't really be selling it if I wasn't, you know, making, like, selling it for more. And I'm also thinking, okay, if I sell it now, I won't have to deal with any issues, because at some point it's going to have issues, because cars always do, right? Well, it needs tires for one.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a good little car, the Spark EV. I'm not trying to, you know, dump
it's
on
it's basic.
It.
It's just, you know, it's basic.
I just can't imagine an 8-year-old Spark EV selling, they're gonna have to sell it for whatever to make money. It's
right, or lose money. I mean, they could be losing money. They could be just just trying to get market share by just building up inventory and starving the other its competitors of product,
putting dealers out of business, and then they're the last one standing. That's kind of what car sharing companies or ride hailing companies have done. I know we're up against time, but very quickly, then what's your plan? Is it the Bolt, or what are you thinking?
No, I'm still thinking Bolt. I looked at the Leaf and says, no, I can't do it.
Don't do that.
But so the Bolt, but I don't know what it's not eligible for any IRA money this year, because the manufacturer's cap carries over until the end of the year.
Right.
So I can't get the money back until the end of the year. So I'm thinking I should wait until until January and buy one in January. Maybe do the buying process now, or like the shopping and get a good price. I think my local dealer, actually, I might be able to get one through my local dealer. I'm going to reach out. We have an EV group on Facebook here for Tallahassee. And one of the local dealers reached out on that. And it looked like a reasonable price. It was below 30, I think, for EV. Probably had some options on it, because it don't think they're adding to the MSRP, but so it would be nice if I could make the arrangements for the sale right at January 1st or whatever.
And would you get the tax benefits, tax credit, from January the 1st?
I'm not even sure how much of it. It'll get some of it, right? Because it's made in America, but I don't know about the minerals, and I don't know if GM knows about the minerals yet. It's like, I don't know where to go. I don't know where to go to get an answer.
Yeah. And also, what I didn't understand, it was floating around, and I don't know if it was signed off or not. Is it refundable?
No. It is. It's refundable. Yeah, you get all the money.
You get all the money. So
regardless of how much you make,
If you didn't need to pay $7,500 on next year's taxes, you get refundable.
Right, and I think
well,
it's
that's a deal, my friends. That is a deal. That's better than we've got.
And I think it's point of purchase too, right? They do
it. Now the dealers can't, as far as I understand, do it at the beginning, but they will enable, or maybe they can.
Yeah, I think in the beginning it's not point of purchase, Dom. I had so many different versions of it that I need to really study the final version.
Right.
I thought that they weren't going to be prepared to do it initially, but that it was going to transition into a point of sale. But I could be wrong. Maybe some of the followers.
Yeah, that's what
I'd
read. It was
that.
Transitioning to point of sale.
Right. Steve B says, wait through January. Production ramp should also make them more available nationwide. That's true. They're really ramping up production. I thought at one point we were like, are they going to make the Bolt anymore? But they're like doubling down. It's like 70,000 a year. I think they're aiming for. It's a lot of Bolts.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
well, that price, they'll sell them at that price.
Yeah. It's a great deal.
It's a great little car. It's Achilles heels, DC fast charging. Yeah. We beat that to death. Uh-huh. But for a lot of people, it doesn't really matter. A lot of people aren't going to need to DC fast charge often. You know, it's a great little car at a great price.
Buddy asks, January of what year? That's this upcoming January.
All right. Not long to wait. Get it done. Get it bought. Ah, it's exciting.
I think that brings us to the end of our show, though. So if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Ring that bell icon, click subscribe. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny, at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. I'm at Dominic_Y. We'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tire. E-Range EV tires are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tire with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetires.com. That's erangetires.com to find your EV's next set of tires. Thank you.